Well, hello, folks. You've got KTWH on your radios or devices, and this is Leo Babeau here for KTWH Two Harbors Community Radio. I am fortunate to have an opportunity to visit with Craig Samborski of Draw Events, who is the lead organizer for the Lake Superior Festival of Sail coming to Agate Bay in Two Harbors, Minnesota, August 4th through 7th. Welcome aboard, Craig.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I am really glad that we could connect. I figured your schedule might make it tougher. We're not talking in the middle of the night. It's just a little later in the evening. And preparations are building all this week, I'm sure, for what I'm thinking of as a one-off, unprecedented kind of event in our neighborhood, at least. Back when I was a young man in the late 60s, they might have called this kind of thing a happening, Craig, if you know what I mean.
I would agree with that statement. It is definitely a happening, that's for sure.
Yeah, and for those of you under the age of 45 or so, you might imagine a combination of everything coming together, kind of a synergy for a fancy word, people, passion, maybe even some historical relevance and a social celebration. So there's a possibility of a flavor of joy that isn't part of your routine in a small town, you know, bigger than the sum of the parts. Yeah.
That's right. Absolutely.
So, Craig, because you've put on a number of such festivals before, maybe you can give us an overview that gives us more of the flavor that I couldn't quite paint the picture of. What is the scene going to include, the festive sail that we'll have happening those 4 days in August on land in our small town and on the water of our harbor and even out on the inland sea that we call Lake Superior?
Sure. Well, we have 10 or 11 ships that are going to be at the event. One that sailed from as far as away as Sevilla, Spain. One that's from Baltimore, Maryland, one from Erie, Pennsylvania, and another one from about 3 hours northeast of Toronto. And we have some great local favorites too, like Gerhard Fulgero from Knife River. We've got Livin' Matt's boat, Schooner Charlie. We've got this Jeff Foster's boat, the Sundew. We have the Inland Seas ship from Traverse City, Michigan. Actually, Sutton Bay is Michigan, to be exact. And then we've got Abbey Road from Bayfield. And Inland Seas and Abbey Road will be doing sailing experiences. And Pride of Baltimore 2 is going to be open all day for tours, but at the end of the day, it will do a sunset sail experience. Lots of different ship activities. All of the ships will be open, except for the sailing ships. All the ships will be open to be toured daily, August 5, 6, 7. On the 4th, August 4th is our grand parade of sail day, so that's when all the ships come sailing into the harbor with cannons ablaze, and they will do, they'll sail in parade formation, they'll hit the docks, and then spend the rest of their day getting inspected by the Coast Guard and getting ready to open for tours on August 5th, and then August 5th, 6th, 7th will be open every day from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., with the exception of Sunday, we close at 5 p.m., so yeah, there'll be a lot of opportunities to visit ships and get all sorts of nautical experiences at the event. On land, we've got, 120 art and craft vendors, like the Agate Dude from Minneapolis, to photographers, to jewelry makers, to clothing makers, to artists, painters, artists that do ink drawings, just all sorts of different really cool art and craft vendors. We've got entertainment that begins first thing in the morning from 10 a.m. and goes till 6 p.m., like Tom Castle, who is I guess you might think about him as like a sea shanty singer, but he's more than that. He sings about tall ships, he sings about the water, but he also sings about other things. And Tom is also a tall ship captain, so he's got a wealth of knowledge about all things tall ships.
So he isn't just being romantic about an experience he doesn't understand. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So he's a great addition to the event. He's been at our festival since 2010, and we've got, what else do we have? A lot of different foods. Blackwoods Restaurant in Two Harbors has been our food vendor coordinator, and we have got all sorts of really cool things. Cuban sandwiches, ice cream, barbecue, Mediterranean food, tacos, anything you can imagine. And then Blackwoods will also have two separate beer gardens at the event. They'll be featuring Castle Danger beer at the event, which is awesome. And yeah, I think that about covers. Oh yeah, there's a giant duck I think that's going to be making an appearance as well. So lots of things happening.
And that sweep is all covering what's happening inside the festival perimeter. And outside of that, there's this town waiting for people to explore as well that are coming up for this event. And I guess, can you remind us again the hours that the fest grounds itself will be bustling? We'll start on Thursday with an opening at 11 a.m. And did you remind me again about the Parade of Sail and how that figures into the opening of the festival?
Right. So Parade of Sail will open our gates to the public at 10 a.m. on August 4th. So people that have tickets for either the Grand Parade of Sail viewing or one of the unlimited weekend tickets can come in and watch the Parade of Sail happen that day. The parade will start roughly around 11 a.m. With this many ships, there's a little bit of logistics that happen along with it. So don't anybody hold me to exactly 11, but it'll be close to that. They'll go out and they'll head onto the lake. They'll get in a parade formation. They'll make a sweep through Burlington Bay, and then they will swing back in through Agate Bay, and then they will all hit the dock and start doing their Coast Guard inspections then.
Right. Craig, and I'm speaking with Craig Samborski today from Draw Events, who's putting on Festive Sail in Two Harbors August 4th through 7th. And Craig, I did really want to kind of get a sense of the route of the Parade of Sail, because sweeping around Burlington Bay means a whole number of people who are outside of the festival grounds, maybe not pass holders, are going to also be able to take a peek at this thing.
Yeah, absolutely they will. There's a lot of places on land that people will get an opportunity to see the Parade of Sail. That is definitely true. You can find vantage points everywhere. I can't say, like right now, I have an idea what the waypoints are for the Festival of Sail, for the Grand Parade.
Sure.
But weather and wind always change things. So that's definitely something to keep in mind.
When the ships come to harbor, all of the vessels that are going to have people aboard them during the weekend need inspection. I'm not quite sure what the Coast Guard's criteria is there.
Well, I couldn't give you a list of what the details are of the inspection, but they do all need to have a certificate of inspection to be at least what's considered an attraction vessel, which is similar to what the kind of tours the Edna G does. It allows people to get on board.
Right.
So, like, one thing I know, for example, is their gangways have to be sturdy and intact. They will go through and inspect other things, though. They'll make sure, they'll look at logbooks, they'll look to see the last time there was like man overboard drills and things like that. But it's a fairly expensive process. The Coast Guard wants it to be safe for everybody to get on board, and they're a good partner on the event in helping us do those things. So that's kind of what it consists of. And, you know, they don't inspect all the ships at once because they don't have that big of a crew themselves. So
right.
it is a little time consuming for them to get through the process of inspecting. Yeah.
Right. Thursday has a lot of inspection before you can really begin to have the tours on,
yes.
on those boats.
Yeah, that's
okay.
true. Yep, that's true.
We're talking about some of the really fun things to look forward to, you know, from the booths, the vendors, the food, the drink, the tours, and there are excursions, correct? I'm not sure
that's
I understand
yeah,
the range of them and when they're happening, and I'm sure that those are essentially sold out.
the event went on sale last year, the day after Thanksgiving, I believe it was, and the sailing tickets are always gone immediately. I mean, I think it took about 15 or 20 minutes for them to sell out. So
there you go, folks.
If I were a customer coming to the event, I would not plan on going sailing. We don't have any of those tickets left, and they're at such a limited capacity, I don't anticipate we're going to have any that just sort of magically pop up. But the sailing experience consists of like a 75 to 90 minute sailing experience. If weather permitting, they'll be out on the lake, which I'm sure it will. They go out in the lake, they do some sailing, the captain will talk about the vessel, we'll talk about experiences of like what the crew has living on board and working on board. And that's kind of the extent of it. It's, to me, I've been out sailing on it before. It's a kind of a once in a lifetime experience, a very cool part of the event. But we don't do that with all the ships because it would greatly limit the number of people that we could have attending the festival. And not every ship is inspected in such a way to be a sailing, you know, to be able to take passengers on board and sail. Like the Spanish ship, for example, because it's a foreign flag vessel, cannot take passengers on board.
I see.
So we'll have a lot of inventory of ship decks to be toured as they're moored up against the break wall.
So the mooring of the ships that are coming for the fest will Can you give us a sense of the layout? There are a couple of vessels that won't be moored to the breakwall that are going to be by the Edna G, perhaps, or no?
Yeah, the Sundew will be over on the Edna G dock because that's the dock that can accommodate the Sundew, and then all of the rest of the tall ships will be on the breakwall.
Okay. Well, I might as well ask then, they're going to be moored to the bayside? I mean, or is that not necessarily...
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, they will all be on the bayside of the breakwall.
And do we have the logistics in place? I know, are the cleats sound and we're ready to go for next week, or do we have any work to do?
Yep. No, they're getting installed this week, but they're all approved by the Army Corps of Engineers, which owns the breakwall.
And right.
They've been fabricated by a local blacksmith by the name of Paul Webster. He's done a great job on them, and yeah, we're very excited. And then, you know, when we're done with the event, we will donate them to the Corps of Engineers.
Fantastic.
So they can be used by pleasure boaters or anybody else that's coming in to tie up there. They'll have a place to do that now. There are a few cleats out there, but not enough by any means to stretch the entire breakwall. So
okay.
we'll be adding to that inventory on a permanent basis.
So that just speaks to all of the logistics involved, that you had another entity, the Army Corps of Engineers, that really is responsibility for that breakwall. I mean, you think of Coast Guard, you think of the DNR, and now you've got all of these parties that you have to coordinate.
There's a lot. There's more so than usually we experience just because of the nature of the land ownership down there. There's City of Two Harbors. There's Lake County for parking and traffic. There is DNR. There is Corps of Engineers. And I know, and MnDOT also. So I guess there's like five or six permits involved in this.
And in fact, something to note is I believe that there will still be pleasure and fishing boats putting in at the DNR boat launch during this event, which just makes it seem like kind of a three-ring circus in some ways to me, but you're handling it.
Yeah, it's not really any different than having to, you know, like walking across the street, like downtown when cars are going by. There's not a lot of space for people to trailer their boat down there and park. I think there's like a total of 32 spaces. So
yeah.
I'm not sure what kind of turnout we're going to have, and there's also, I do know that there's a fairly heavy schedule of ore carriers coming and going that weekend, which is great because our customers will love to see that. But the Coast Guard, because this is what's considered a marine event of national significance, the Coast Guard implements a safety zone around the tall ships. So I don't anticipate we're going to have a lot of like recreational boaters just kind of bobbing around close to the tall ships. The Coast Guard they're quite strict about the safety zone around the ships, even when they're tied up, not just when they're underway. So, you know, there definitely it'll be easy for if you're in a pleasure boat and you want to get out and go fishing or whatever, that accessibility is there. But I'm not sure there's going to be a lot of space in the harbor that's going to be accessible to just drop anchor and hang out.
Right. And I didn't really think so much about the hangers outers, but of course, that's where all the fun viewing would be in the bay. But as you said, there are multiple, I don't know what you call them, clearances that the Coast Guard wants to be maintained. And it's a very serious violation. If I remember right, you told me it was not something that you wanted to run afoul of as the regulations.
Yeah, I remember somebody saying one time, and don't quote me on this, I'm just telling you from like a conversation. I recall somebody saying that's like a $30,000 fine and they take your boat away from you. Now I'm not 100% sure about it, but I know in every tall ship festival I've done there, they are strict about it. And if you're getting close to it, they will let you know.
Yeah. Well, Craig, speaking of challenges, it's been a pretty tumultuous year in our little town of Two Harbors with the politics of a mayoral recall and a city council facing challenges. And all the while, you were trying to figure out the logistics of your event. And I'm sure that you've heard that for some people, this great happening that a lot of us are looking forward to could also make them a little nervous about how things are going to work out, you know, and having their daily lives put in a position that, you know, our little town isn't necessarily used to. So you've probably come up against a lot of legitimate concerns brought up to you daily about logistics. And so I guess we'll have some questions to offer you for, you know, about how we're going about managing traffic, safety, parking,
sure,
challenges for small business and so on. But I did want to see how in your view, all of those logistical hurdles are being overcome, that you've managed, even though it was a kind of a bumpy ride over some of the last 8 or 9 months. For you, it's shaping up solidly a little over a week from the gates opening?
Yeah, it is. You know, there's a lot of elements to doing this event in such a way that the customer has a great experience, and we really do try and have a soft impact on the community, and we try and make, you know, the impact we have a positive impact. So, for example, when this event has taken place in Duluth before, it's had a $15 million economic impact on businesses. And so that's like hotels, motels, restaurants, bars, retail. I heard a story anecdotally that when this event is in Duluth, that the owner of the Duluth Pack shop, all he does all day is stock toilet paper in the store's bathroom because that's how busy they are. So we want this to be positive for the community. At a 60,000 foot view of it, that economic impact is significant because there's sales tax paid on those dollars spent in the event. And when I talk about that $15 million economic impact in Duluth, that's activity that takes place outside of our festival gates. That's not our ticket sales.
Right.
That's direct impact, and there's sales tax on that. So the city will see, I think, a good economic impact from it.
Right.
When it comes to traffic, you know, I think in a normal world, in a normal summer, Two Harbors is busy with traffic. I know that Chief Hoganson and his assistant chief Ken have been working really hard and working hand in hand with us to try and lessen that impact. So we've got, I think we have in place a really good parking and traffic plan. If you're coming northbound from, say, Minneapolis or Duluth, you're going to get up to, I guess it's 11th Street.
It is Street, yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes known as County State Aid Highway 26 that runs from the Super 1 up what we call the back way to Lake County Highway 2.
Yeah, so our parking is up in that area, so you will take a left at that light. You will go up to Highway 2, and a couple of our lots are down to the right, and the majority are to the left. So from a traffic perspective, I think that helps a lot within the city. If you're coming southbound on Highway 61, when you get to the light at Highway 2, you'll take an immediate right and go up Highway 2 to either high school parking, the other parking lots we have, or the fairground lot, which we have, and the arena lot, which we have. So it hopefully will minimize a lot of the impact in, you know, directly downtown and in the neighborhood. I do know that the police do plan on, or the city public works do plan on having some parking available on the streets. I can't tell you exactly which streets those are or avenues they are, but I do know there is a plan for that. And I believe the public works is going to be starting to put signs out for where there is no parking soon.
Right.
So residents will see those signs in place as well.
Well, Craig, if Chief Hoganson hasn't informed you yet, there is on the Two Harbors Police Department Facebook page a very specific map now that outlines both a few streets that have limited traffic patterns on them, and there aren't many, and a number of streets where there's limited parking, and yet there are plenty of streets that do have parking. So it's kind of all outlined on a map that's now available on the Facebook page of the Two Harbors Police Department.
Well, that's wonderful. I will have to go check that out.
I think you should. I was going to surprise you with that question, but I could tell that you probably haven't seen that map from your comments just now, so I thought you'd want to know.
I haven't. We're about
sharing information here and not parsing it out. You know, nobody has to pay for information from a non-commercial station. So I thought that would be very helpful for folks to know. But it does, before I ask you a few kind of drilling down questions about these logistics, do you have any general suggestions for both fest goers and maybe even the residents who don't have a pass for fest grounds that might help to make sure that we have a good fest experience in Two Harbors? Anything to keep in mind?
Well,
I mean, besides a good attitude?
I think a good attitude is a big part of it. You know, I remember, you know, early on in my career, I started working at the Deck in Duluth when I was like 14. And I remember that's kind of around the time when tourism started booming. And I remember working at the Airstream convention that was here, and trying to get to work was extraordinarily frustrating because of the traffic. And Duluth has kind of become that, you know, the tourism, big tourism destination on the weekends. So when you think about going to Canal Park in Duluth on the weekends, you think twice. I have a bicycle, so if I want to go down there, I oftentimes take my bike because it's really easy to do that. But I'm fairly type A, so I can get frustrated easily, and traffic and parking make me frustrated. I temper that type A response with that those things are good for the community. It's like grandma's marathon, you know. Yes, I would like, there's times I'd like to go down to Canal Park and do things and like maybe the marathon's in town, or maybe Blues Fest is playing, and it makes it challenging to do that. But in the big picture of things, these events, in my opinion, are really good for communities. They do provide that sort of element in life that's hard to get. There's not a lot of places that get this festival, and it's not because we're just choosy. It's just that with everybody's schedule and the ship schedules, it's hard to put it together. So I have, I don't know, I bet I got half a dozen markets right now that are sort of salivating to get the event there. And it's because it does have a positive impact on the community overall. There will be some hiccups. There will be some inconvenience, and there will be a little bit of pain about that goes on with it. Just when you put this volume of people into a small space together, it's like going to an arena and watching a hockey game. You know, you're probably going to wait a little while in line to get a hot dog and a beer. But in the long run, it's worth it. The experience, seeing these tall ships is, for a lot of people, this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And they will go away with very fond memories. And what I try and encourage residents to do wherever I go with this event is that maybe you are just a resident of Two Harbors. You're not part of the festival. You're not working, whatever. Your town where you live is on display. That's kind of the way it is. And I try and encourage people to really put their best foot forward with their community. And, you know, despite the politics in Two Harbors, and, you know, yes, I'm certainly aware of what's transpired the last 6-9 months, whatever it is, but Two Harbors is a great community. I have met people that will probably be friends for the rest of my life in the last 9 months in Two Harbors. And I cherish that, you know. Like, I look at working with Rick and Ken from the police department, and ideologically, or maybe on some of our ideas, we've been at odds, but I've really loved working with those two guys. And, you know, I consider them friends now. And likewise with several of the city councilors and the city administration. I mean, they've been very supportive. And this is really, again, a great chance for Two Harbors to shine. Because what happens, I'll bring these ships there and people will come from, I think we've sold tickets in like 41 or 42 states across America and several of the Canadian provinces. People from all over are going to come and see this. And they're going to look at Two Harbors and they're going to think, wow, wouldn't it be fun to come back here next year and rent a cottage or stay at one of the lodges or the hotels and spend a week here and do some day tripping up the shore, but be able to go and enjoy Vanilla Bean, Blackwoods, Castle Danger, Judy's Cafe, Culver's, all of those things. And Two Harbors has that charm. And I expect there's going to be a lot of residual visitors that come and explore on their own without having to attend an event because they like Two Harbors.
Well, that's well spoken, Craig. That is definitely largely speaking to the upside, and it isn't all just short term because, like you said, there will be some adventures that happen during those 4 days when traffic is peak. I lived on the Oregon coast, and in the summertime, it was a completely different place at noon than it was at noon.
Yeah, totally.
Noon in November, you could walk down the middle of the road, and
right.
it changes.
Yeah, you're right.
Exactly. So with that in mind, I did think it would be helpful to let folks get a little bit of a candid response on some of those logistical things to make themselves confident that we've got a handle on some of these things. So if you would be willing to give some short answers to some of these, it's kind of a little checklist, Craig, and I'd appreciate your help getting through it if you don't mind.
Sure.
Can you remind us essentially what you've set up in terms of scale and location of the parking opportunities that will allow people to be off the streets of Two Harbors but easily able to access the fest entrance?
Yeah, there's the arena lot, the fairgrounds lot, the high school lot. There's, let's see, three property owners a little bit further north on the highway, too. I don't want to mention their names.
Yeah, that's wise.
You know, that's
yeah.
a privacy thing.
Yeah.
But I think at this point, I think we've got like just a little over 5,000 parking spaces, not including the on-street parking. And then, so we just gear our ticket sales to that. You know, we're not going to oversell ticket where there's no parking, right? You know, that's one of the ways we look at doing this. Duluth has been a larger festival because Duluth has just a lot more on-street parking, and Duluth has public buses. So,
indeed.
You know, people can park their hotels at the edge, for example, and take a DTA bus into downtown, or they can get on the Lake Walk and actually walk downtown. That's the advantage that a place like Duluth does. I mean, there's been a lot of places we've done this, like Philadelphia. On the Philadelphia's waterfront, I mean, I think there's parking for like maybe 500 or 600 cars. So, you know, literally everybody that came to that festival had to park somewhere in downtown Philadelphia and figure out either walking, taking the Patco subway to the waterfront, or a bus, or an Uber, or a cab. It just varies. You know, Los Angeles, same thing. I mean,
So, well, the walk from, say, the arena parking lot or the high school is still a haul. So we have shuttles that will service all of the lots?
Yep, there's shuttles that will service the parking lots, and they'll start earlier than the gates open. They'll start, like, I think they start, like, 2.5 hours before the gates open. So people can get on the shuttle, and they'll get picked up. We plan the shuttle and parking route to be almost all of it is on Highway 2. So it makes it easy for the shuttles to pick people up and get them down to the event site, make their loop back, and do it all over again. I feel very confident about that. I feel like we have a good plan in place. Is it perfect? No. I mean, to be honest with you, like, it's like when I go to the state fair with my kids or my family, you know, I mean, it, for me, it's a little bit of an exercise because, you know, like I said, I'm type A. I'm kind of used to things happening fast, and you got to slow your life down for that. And we tell our customers, and we do have a lot of repeat customers. They understand, you know, we've been messaging them that, you know, hey, this is what it looks like. And, you know, here's the layout of things. Yeah, I think we have identified the best possible plan there is. And it's not just me. It's MnDOT. It's Two Harbors Police. It's Lake County Sheriff. It's all of the public safety community together meeting on many different occasions. And the guy who, the retired police officer from Duluth that did tall ship traffic since I think 2010 is on board as one of our team members. So we're all looking at that and working together in a group to come up with the best possible solutions to minimize time sitting in a shuttle bus and also, you know, minimizing Two Harbors residents' time. So, like, if they want to get in their car and go to Super One and get groceries or go up to Seagrin's Hardware, we're doing, you know, everything we can to minimize that. So it's easy for them to accomplish that because, you know, it's on a weekend and that's when people go do their shopping. So we understand that and we're sensitive to that.
We're speaking today with Craig Samborski, organizer of the Festive Sail Lake Superior 2022. And Craig, in order for that to all work out so that 5,000 parking spots might be the magic number, you've had to essentially meter out how many tickets you would be selling this event. At least I heard you saying on Duluth TV News the other week that I think you were looking at 6,000 per day, or did I mishear that?
No, I mean, that's what it averages out to. I can't... Ticketing and capacities are a really complicated issue because, as you noted earlier, on the Parade of Sail Day, there are people that are going to go down to the waterfront on like Burlington Bay, et cetera, that are not going to buy a parking ticket. They're not going to buy a ticket to the festival. They're just going to go figure out a way to go see the ship. So
absolutely.
It's difficult to put the whole thing in context. Sunday is a quieter day than Friday is. So,
yeah.
On average, yes, that's what we're talking about. But some days are higher than others. Some days there's more shuttle buses than other days, and that's just based historically. But, you know, this event is working out to be about a quarter of the size of what Duluth has been
right.
in the past. So
right.
I expect where the anxiety, some of the anxiety that's out there about, you know, being overwhelmed, you know, like the size of this thing in Duluth is not going to be founded in the results. I mean, you know, I'm a private business owner. Yes, I'd love to sell as many tickets as possible to the event, but I've also been doing this for 3 decades now, and I've seen it work well, and I've seen it work very poorly. And, you know, we do not want to repeat that very poor experience. We want it to be a positive experience. And so we're very sensitive to what our capacities are, and a lot of it is driven by parking.
Yeah, and you mentioned in the Duluth newscast that you were thinking, you thought you had it figured out, there'd be about 5,000 cars per day stopping for events in Two Harbors.
Well,
and
you know, yeah, roughly. I mean, we've got that capacity. I think there's days that we're not going to fill those cars, though. I think Sunday we're going to have excess parking.
I guess as somebody who grew up in the state of New Jersey and like you might have some type A aspects as personality, there are those of us that like to game things and figure out how I can get as close as possible and find cheap parking in a city that has not a single parking meter in it. So
you are exactly right.
So what is the thought on the number of people who might, are you seeing from the sales of parking passes, whether or not there might be a lot of people trying to figure out more than one way to park?
I would not say that's an experience I've had with this event so far. People are buying parking tickets right now. And, you know, there might be some people from the region that are maybe doing that. I would say, you know, 90% of our customers are tourists from out of town. I mean, I think in Duluth, it's actually like 92% is our number. It is really a destination tourism event. So
indeed,
those people coming from out of town, when you've got a couple of younger kids in the car, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, people do not spend a lot of time searching for that free parking space. what they try and do is they try and figure out what is the path of least resistance. They listen to the organizer,
right?
Or the organizational team to figure out, okay, they're telling me this is the plan and that's what we're going to do. Well, like, I even though I do this for a living and I've been doing it for many, many years, when I take my family to, just for example, the state fair, I look at the state fair website, I figure out where parking is, and I just follow it because I know, yes, there are going to be those few opportunities where there might be a parking spot open on the street somewhere. Maybe I won't get a ticket for it, but is it really worth risking, you know, a ticket or getting towed? Probably not. So
right.
I just try and follow their game plan. I trust in the fact that, like, State Fair, for example, they've been doing it professionally for a long time, day in and day out. So from my perspective, it makes sense to follow that.
I guess it begged the question of whether we know that there will be police officers who will be staffing several of the intersections on Highway 61 to, I guess you'd say, to override or complement any MnDOT traffic signals that are still happening. But they really have to make a lot of people make a left-hand turn in one place for sure. And I'm wondering whether, will there be officers at each of the succeeding traffic lights after they get to the traffic light at 11th Street at the Super One? Will they also be stationed at the additional traffic lights all the way up to the north end of town where Highway 2 comes in?
They will be, yes.
Okay.
Yes, indeed.
So if somebody wants to make a left-hand turn, they might actually have an officer facilitate it, because otherwise they could really create mayhem.
That's right. Yeah, the officers all have keys to turn the lights to flashing from red regular lights. And so I would say that, you know, the public safety and MnDOT have a very good handle on dealing with those situations.
Terrific. How about out at the Agate Bay up to our Two Harbors break wall? A lot of us are intrigued because that break wall is kind of an intricate structure in terms of how you have pedestrians walking on it. If it might not be obvious to some of us if it's going to be free to anyone who's on site with a pass, or whether you're going to limit it to people who have passes to actually board boats.
No, we will limit it to just people that have tickets. So you can walk out there, but
yeah.
we can meter that line from land, you know, so we're not
going to
put.
Thank you.
We're not going to, well, yeah, I mean, just logically, we're not going to put 6,000 people out on that break wall. You know, we can meter it. I just know from historically the four larger ships are the big attractions, and we know that there's going to be lines from them. So as people are exiting the ships and exiting the break wall, we'll meter them and let more people out on the break wall. That's our plan.
Yeah, and I certainly ask this because I know a number of us who might not have passes to get on board would really revel in being able to observe these ships up close. Having, you know, seen tall ships fest before, including the Bicentennial in New York City in Manhattan, and having that as a vivid life memory, I get that this is really worth getting out on that break wall. But I also realize that we have one of the coldest lakes in North America, and, you know, and there's a limited walking surface. So was just hopeful that the metering out might happen. And just for reassurances, we're certainly prepared for any eventuality, such as somebody winding up in the water. I know we do everything we can for that not to happen.
We definitely have plans for that in place.
I don't know whether that includes personnel whose job it is just to watch for that. That's what I was curious about. Whether
it is, there are a lot of we have a lot of volunteers signed up for this event, and we will definitely have that element covered.
So, Craig, I was out at the break wall on Sunday and found a pretty phenomenal northwest wind blowing up against that break wall. Is there any criteria that you have that applies to all the captains and all of the vessels to prevent them from at least going out on excursions? I don't know if taking people on board would matter with wind direction and speed, but are there kind
Not
of like
really.
Hurricane warnings that get issued that shut things down at all?
Kind of the rule is the captain, it's the captain's call. I don't recall an instance where we've had a weather thing that's kept them from sailing.
Okay.
I could see them spending time, like if it seriously got real wicked, like a northeaster, you know, I could see them doing something different, like sailing around Agate Bay. I mean, if it were such that we had to cancel the sale, you know, we would certainly, you know, refund those customers the sailing portion of their ticket.
Yeah, and so, I was just thinking for safety's sake, so everybody knows that that does get paid attention to if that ever becomes a factor. I know these are highly skilled professionals. I get that.
Right. The mantra, it's like flying an airplane. The mantra of sailing is safety first. So they're all geared towards that. And, you know, like these ships are, you know, even the smaller vessels are big, heavy vessels. So, yeah, they move around, you know, in wind, but none of them have their sails up at the dock, which is good. So, you know, you'll get some wave action, but, you know, I look at, like, you know, places where we have like a 15-foot tide, like in Philadelphia or Los Angeles, you know, where we contend with that huge tide every day, and in Los Angeles especially, you know, the ocean out there can be very rough. So we've contended with that before, but, you know, they, like Duluth, the way it is in Duluth, they don't tie up in a place that's really great. You get motion activity from the canal, and you get, you know, like if you get a southwest wind when you're in the harbor in Duluth, you know, it kind of beats on the boats a little bit, but we've done that before and haven't had a problem with it yet. So knock on wood, it will not happen.
Great. So we've covered safety in the water realm, and then on land, it's my understanding that folks who are gaining admittance will not be able to have backpacks. Is that true?
It's true.
Okay.
We limit it to, I believe it's like the size of the purse. We reserve the right to search it. And if there's a family that's got like a diaper bag, you know, of course we're going to let that in. We'll search it. But we take that all seriously. That's one of the reasons this is a gated event now, and not just, you don't just buy tickets to go board the ships. You know, it's a gated event because we want to know who's coming into the event. And to get into our event, you know, you're going to have one form of identification. Like when you buy your ticket with a credit card, we capture the data that's associated with that credit card. So, you know, we know who's coming in.
Yeah. So that just kind of begs the question that, you know, for basic human comfort, we're not liable to be in the middle of a heat wave, but is there any free drinking water on site, or does this mean that people are driven to a vendor for their refreshment?
Yeah, exactly. They just, the event would not be feasible. If we started giving away drinking water, we'd probably be adding a lot more money to the ticket price, which we'd also hear about that. You know, my suggestion is to everybody is this, you know, think about your own physical capabilities. Like when I go work out on this, so I've done two of these festivals already this summer in sweltering heat in Ohio and Michigan, and we just plan for it. I wear a sun hat. I have a hydrate. There'll be plenty of opportunities to hydrate. And I don't believe Blackwoods is charging an arm and a leg for water. So water will be plentiful. And, you know, do those things you need to do to keep yourself cool. And, you know, also understand this is not a small event site. You know, if you were to walk from Van Hoven Park all the way over to the break wall, I mean, I think we're talking probably half a mile, three quarters of a mile. You know, make sure you're in shape to do that. You know, otherwise, you might struggle to try and accomplish that. But so far, you know, we've not had problems with that. Philadelphia, the event was on both sides of the Delaware River. In Tacoma, where we did the event, it was a very similar layout to this. There's like really two event sites. There's the event taking place over Van Hoven, and then you got to walk over on the path over to the DNR lot to get on the rest of the ship. So there's definitely some walking involved in this.
I checked that out today for myself and realized that it's not a bad scene, but it is stretched out around the Sagatt Bay. We have more terrain than I really paid attention to before, and that you're going to have people have enough room. There's going to be enough elbow room. That's one of the good signs, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's great to have this much room. And it's just, it's the nature of this festival. You know, again, I liken this to, you know, like the Minnesota State Fair. You know, when I go to the fair and you want to see everything that's there, you're going to walk. I mean, that's just the reality of it. It's just, you know, with the ships, the way they're configured, their size, and, you know, they're very limited where they can tie up. So that in and of itself dictates, you know, how big of an event site we're going to have.
Yeah. Well, Craig, thanks for spending so much time with me. I went through a laundry list of questions.
Great.
I think I'll say I'm on behalf of KTWH, we're wishing everyone a positive festive sail week experience. And Craig, we offer you best wishes on this coming off
smoothly. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to seeing all of you and your staff at the event.
Yeah, absolutely. Know that we will try as best we can to remain in in touch with your teams when there are any significant changes that the public might benefit from knowing about, or any rules changes that help keep everyone safe, and hope that everyone has a great time during this event that's going to be, by the time this airs on Wednesday morning, will be just a little over a week from the start of the Festa Sale, and it's just something that we may never see the likes of again, and we're just glad that you were able to bring it here. Craig, thanks for visiting.
Yeah, thank you very much. It was great talking to you, Leo.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Yeah, as we said, we'll see you on the scene, Craig. We'll see you next week.
Okay, take care.
Bye now. Craig Samborski, who is the lead organizer with Draw Events, running the Festive Sale 2022 in Two Harbors, Minnesota, on Agate Bay and our great inland sea, Lake Superior. This is Leo for KTWH.